problem as I'm aging. I am accidentally waking up my wife with my ankles. With my ankles, Brad.
With your ankle? Are you kicking her in the head or
no,
what?
No, here's the thing. I get up in the morning, you know, and I'm traditionally, you can kind of tiptoe across the room and you know, head to brush your teeth or whatever. And
yeah.
My ankles now in the morning, I don't know. It's just, I guess, the virtue of getting older. They're just like, it's like snack, crackle, and pop, and they are loud. They are loud in the morning. Like, it sounds like someone violently opening a trapper keeper, like snap, crackle, crack, you know, that kind of thing.
Or like squeezing bubble wrap, that kind of sound?
Yeah, or just like wrapping a leg of lamb with tin foil. Like, that's what my ankles sound like now. And so I see the wincing. I like, you know how, have you ever had this where you sort of, you're watching your significant other as you're tiptoeing across the room to make sure you're not waking them up. I'm watching her and I have no control over it. My ankles are crack, 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 crack. And you just see like the little wincing of like, as though someone's snapping their fingers right next to their ear. Cause that's what it sounds like. It's like 700 decibels.
Oh my God! What can you do about this? Is there any product? Is there any like wrap that you can put around there? Can you learn to start walking on your hands?
I mean, I guess I could just do like stumpy heel walking where I like throw my whole leg, but I feel like that's going to hit the wooden floors louder. I don't know what the answer is. I tried to, this morning, while laying in bed, gently rotate my ankles, you know, kind of warm them up, you know, kind of just imagine them going.
You're doing ankle warm-ups
in bed? Yeah, I'm doing my ankle warm-ups, but here's what happened. Now I'm in the bed and this is what's going on. Crack, 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 as I'm doing my gentle ankle warm-ups.
And it's even closer to her, so wait, she's hearing it even louder.
So this is, I feel like as a husband, I'm in an unwinnable situation. I'm trying to be sweet and kind, and it's just my ankles are fighting against me, Brad. I don't know that I can find a way out of this.
You better hope that she doesn't go out there and find some nice young guy with quiet ankles.
So tell me about yourself, Robert. How are your ankles?
The judge is up there, you know, could you tell me the reason for this divorce? Well, listen, I found another guy. He's got nice, quiet ankles. He's got everything I'm looking for in a guy. You know, okay, case dismissed.
The judge just has a big approved stamp, ka-chunk. Yeah, approved.
Yeah, listen, I know, I've had people with loud ankles in here. They disgust me. Get out of here, Mr. Kellett, and take your cracky ankles with you.
Take your crackly popcorn ankles home with you. Drag them out of my courtroom. And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about crackly ankles and making comics.
And Brad Geiger's quiet ankles and making a living from comics.
I feel like that was a shot too low, my friend. Too low.
Well, listen, yeah, but have you seen my ankles? They're not attractive. They may be quiet, but they're not attractive. I'm Brad Geiger, the author of the Webcomics Handbook and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, owner of Crackly Ankles and cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. We got a big show for everybody. And a reminder that you could be watching the show live with our friends over at the Comic Lab Live Gab. That's over at patreon.com/comiclab, where you can watch the stream every Tuesday morning. And Brad and I are waving to the camera right now. And there is a concurrent live stream chat. So you can chat along and we take additional questions, comments, considerations, concerns, critiques in the middle and before and after the show. So you can get some extra questions in. And then if you miss the show, you can watch it saved on the old database there. If you miss the show live for Life, Love, or Learning. And Brad, we got a big show today because we're getting a lot of questions specifically about where to put and where to host and where to show and where to display your comics. Yeah. There's like bang, 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 three or four questions this week on that same topic.
Yeah, so we're going to go through them one at a time because they all have kind of similar answers. Each one of them is a little bit different, but it all comes down to the same stuff. So for our central question, we're going to take this coming in from Patrick DeThomas, who says, hey, comic dudes, my question is there a list of places you can post your webcomic that allows you to maintain full ownership of your work? I know Dave was iffy on webtoons until he had a lawyer read it. We've already talked about that. Mm-hmm. But are there other known locations to do so? So let's let's bring it back to some of the basics that we talk about on the show all the time. And that is, yes, there is a place you can post your comics. Okay. There are lots of places you can post your comics. When we say own and control your own work, what we're saying specifically is that you should have a website.
Yes.
Because you don't truly own and control your own work until you have a website. Think about it. Even if it seems outlandish to you, any place you post your comic that you don't own, they can change the rules at any time mm-hmm. and either kick you out or create something that's untenable for you. If at any time somebody can change the rules and you don't have access to that audience anymore, you don't own and control your own work. So yes, there's a place you can post your stuff. The first place is your website. You should be working on building
yes.
a website.
Yes.
The second place is every social media platform that you feel is a good fit for your comic. This mm-hmm. includes Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Pinterest. The list goes on and on and on. You should be posting there as well. And of course, in your profile page or the equivalent, you should be funneling back to your website along with any crowdfunding that you're doing as well. And then you should be mirroring your work on some of those other places that we've talked about, like Webtoons and Topastic and so forth. Mm-hmm. Those are perfectly good places to mirror. In our opinion, I think you and I are in lockstep on this, Dave, not a good place to build, but a perfectly good place to mirror mm-hmm. your stuff mm-hmm. with the idea that everything funnels back into that central location at where you do own and control your own work. Dave Kellett, just to start off, anything to add to that? In other words, people are saying, where do I post my stuff? Where do I go? Are we missing anything from that list?
I think, Brad did an excellent summary. The only one that I would add to that list that you can own and control in the sense that you are paying for a service and you own the distribution of it is your mailing list, which I think yes. is in lockstep with your yes. website. I think that's the one yeah. to punch. And I know if you're in your 20s or late teens or maybe even your early 30s, I know to some of us, email sounds like I'm saying, well, Dave Kell is telling me to fax my comics to people.
Yeah,
I know that it sounds like that to some of us. But email is still a really effective outreach for a big chunk of the population, and you can own and control it. And so like Brad was saying, you want it so that no one can come in, no company can come in, change the terms. No company can like pull up sticks or go bankrupt and suddenly you are left adrift because you didn't have an outlet that you own and control. If my website fails, if my mailing list fails, and both are very possible for a billion mm-hmm. reasons, all related to me, I could recreate them within a couple of weeks on some other host or some other service, rebuild and have virtually everything that I had going at 100% within a week or two, again. So that's owning and controlling, is that I have the ability to pick up. I have the ability to control it, to move it, to change locations. And no narcissistic billionaire can tell me what I can or cannot do with my work.
Right. And in terms of, like you said, it makes it say anybody who's 20 something or 30 something thinks that that's the equivalent of faxing in. Believe me, Dave, they had the same reaction when I said you need your own website, because they're convinced, number one, that nobody visits websites anymore. That's not particularly true. And they're convinced that the only place to find webcomics readers or comics readers in general is Webtoons, right?
Right.
That's where all the readers are. And you're making a really, really simple mistake in that because, number one, remember what I told you not so long ago, there's an infinite number of readers out there. There's no one place that has cornered the market on all of the readers for your stuff. Right. There's no one magic place that you put your stuff and all of a sudden you find the readers. Your readers are out there in a myriad of different places. And it's your job to use all those things that I just talked about to gather them yourself, right? And that's where I know it sounds old-fashioned and dopey to say you need a website. I get that. I understand. Doesn't mean that it's wrong. It just means that you've got a very narrow view of what web publishing is, and you need to expand it.
And on some level, we need to acknowledge that there's sort of a value per reader in their location. And here's what I mean by that. You might be saying, all right, Dave and Brad, I hear you on this, that I need to own and control my own work. But there is no way that I, as an individual, can match the reach of Webtoons or the reach of Instagram or the reach of Topastic. Right. Like, and to that, I would say, if this is just ballpark numbers, I'm kind of grabbing them out of nowhere. But if I have 1,000 readers that come to my site, in a lot of respects, those 1,000 people are worth more per reader than 100,000 on Webtoons or 100,000 on Instagram. I can activate them. I can monetize them. I can communicate with them. And I own my relationship with them. There's no third party that tells me what I can or cannot say to them, with them, to them, about them, from them. The communication is clean and clear because I own and control it. So it's not even necessarily about money. It's about being able to repeatedly build a relationship in the way that you want to do it. In a way that you own and control.
Yep, absolutely. And that's what we're talking about when we repeat over and over, own and control your own work. Now, let's take this a little bit further, because again, these all have the same theme. Here's our next question. Any places, are there any suggestions for places to publish a single panel comic? I'm on a tear creating a loosely themed daily since October, and except for the admiration for my paltry 60 or so consistent likes or comments on Instagram and Facebook, and some of my friends, I know that it's a really small sum of folks, and I want to test out a larger audience. Mm-hmm. I do have a website. I'm not afraid to use it.
Phrasing. Sorry, I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to use it.
That's right. I got it right here. But where should I be posting my stuff? All right. And again, this is going to come back. There are some places that you can see a little bit of an advantage one way or another. In other words, a long form comic is going to have a bit of an advantage on Webtoons. A long form comic that uses a certain drawing style and has a certain a theme or topic to its writing is going to do very well on Webtoons. And all you got to do is go on Webtoons, scroll for 5 seconds. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
You'll know that style as soon as you see it. Yeah, exactly.
They've got a thing that's going on there. Tapas is very much the same way. But in general, any place you post that you could feasibly, if your work is good enough, if you've got the quality, you could post a single panel on Webtoons and get traction. Mm-hmm. And that's when it's going to start to come down to. People are like, well, I'm posting it here, but it isn't getting traction, so I must be posting it in the wrong place. And my news for you here, especially with a single panel, number one, single panel is going to do great on any traditional social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that other stuff. It's not that you haven't found the right place to post a single panel. It's that you're not quite connecting with your audience yet. And there could be a couple of different reasons for that, right? One of which is going to be quality. You need to keep going. Your quality isn't quite there yet. You need to improve. Yeah, you've only been doing this for a short while. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to surmise that maybe you've got some improvement to do. Don't take your eye off the ball. This is not about where you're posting it. It is about what you're posting, and also that you've only been posting for a short amount of time. And it's kind of unrealistic to think that you will have hit a very big audience by now. Am I off base on that one?
No, I think you're right. I think, single panel, let's talk about the advantages and disadvantages of single panel. Is that you have with single panel the ability to spread like wildfire in a way that even comic strips don't have, and in a way that long form definitely doesn't have. So you can spread like wildfire. However, it's a little harder to make big inroads on people's hearts and minds in a long term way. And so, what do I mean by that? Let's say I'm spreading a bunch of grass seed all over. That's basically like a single panel. It'll go everywhere. It'll grow. It'll do fine. But like a longer form comic strip or longer form storyline can be more like a single oak seed. It's harder to get that thing to grow. But once it does, the roots go real deep. And it's a little hard. Yeah. I'm saying it's a little harder with a single panel. That's all I'm saying is that you will grow like mad on Reddit. You will grow like mad on whether it's a Go Comics or a Webtoons, because it's easy to find, share, distribute, pass along to a pal. It's easy to go viral, basically, with a single panel because you're in, you're out. People get it. It's all self-contained. They know where they are. And it's easy to share with their cousin who also loves this topic. Right. So that's the advantage. So you'll definitely want to do Reddit. You could do something like mirroring on Go Comics, which has a very strong single panel vibe, or, you know, that kind of thing. Like Brad said, you could find success on Webtoons, although that's not really their specialty. But wherever you go, I would say, again, this is one of those, like, all of us, myself included, think that we're the special snowflake. But again, you want to own and control your own website. You want to own and control your own mailing list, because that's where the rubber will really hit the road in terms of growing and maintaining your audience.
Absolutely. So let's take the third question that came in that was along this theme. This person coming in, his name is Jay. He's a Patreon backer for a while. He says he's using a webcomic aggregator, and I'm not going to name him by name because I don't want to make any one person like singled out. But he's using a webcomic aggregator, basically one of those sites that says, hey, we'll host your webcomic. All you got to do is create an account, and boom, 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 you've got a site and publishing software. It's all pre-done for you, okay? So he's using one of those, a webcomic aggregator, to host my comic. Now, I did this fairly impulsively before vetting whether this was a good idea. And I wondered if you guys could let me know if this is a service worth sticking with or whether I should change things up. Now what we're talking about, there's a number of these sites that are these services out there. Global Comics, Pocket Comics, Comic Fury, Comic Rocket, Drunk Duck. One of them used to be called Smack Jeeves, but I think they rebranded themselves as Pocket Comics. There's a number of these sites that are out there. Now, number one, I'm going to take you back to my previous answer. You're not owning and controlling your own work.
Right.
Not yet. Because that webcomics aggregator, for whatever reason, could decide that you're not a good fit for them. Bank and bump you right off. And now you're cut off from your own audience because you don't really own it and control it. Okay. So that's number one. Number two, I've got and this is me, I'm going to out myself as a bit of a, I don't know, fuddy duddy, somebody who's maybe even a little bit of an elitist. Every time I go to one of those sites that are one of those services, right? Like the ones I mentioned, I look at a whole lot of comics that to me just don't look very good. They don't look very professional. They don't look like they're done very well. And my big problem about posting on one of those groups is that I kind of get lumped in with them, and it reflects badly on me. Mm-hmm. Is my problem there is that I don't necessarily want that to reflect on my comic. I don't like that at all. And again, I'm not conned into this idea that any one of those services has cornered the market on webcomics readers. I know that I can find readers out there because they're all over the place. Most of them I'm going to find on social media, for example.
Right.
And say, hey, here I am. And if I'm doing good stuff, they're going to come to me. I'm not a big fan of webcomics aggregators for that. But even more to the point, you're still not owning and controlling your own work. It's believe me, I get it. It's very attractive.
Yep.
Because you're not doing a WordPress install. You're not installing a CMS. And we suggest Tucheki for that. You're not designing it yourself. It's all done. It's a push button thing. Yeah. And I totally get it. The problem is that you need to move on from there as soon as you're able, because you're still not owning and controlling your own work.
Yeah, I really have nothing substantive to add to that because Brad nailed it so much. I basically to say, we get it in terms of the appeal of a turnkey system, especially, let's be honest, when you're first learning how to be a cartoonist, or do I even want to be a cartoonist, that first year or two where you're trying to figure it out, I get the appeal of like, look, I just want a turnkey service. I'll put it up. I'll see if there's any spark there for them, for me, for the world. I get it. I understand that. But when you get to the point, like Brad was saying, where you're ready to start really building and making traction with your career, you're like, no, this is what I want to do. This is how I want to go forward for the next 5-10 years. Then it's time to say, no, I need to own and control. And like Brad said, we would recommend Tucheki because it's a great jumping off point for a hosted web WordPress based system. And again, so a lot of this comes back to our basic advice, which is that when you own and control your own work, will you be using other social media systems? Absolutely. Will you be mirroring it? Absolutely. Will those in turn bring you audiences that you might not otherwise have got? Yep. We can argue that too. But the idea is to be funneling people down into systems that you own and control, because ultimately when those other companies go belly up, or when they get bought out, or when a billionaire comes in and changes their mind, I'm not necessarily joking about this or that, but you will have a core audience that you own and control and can communicate with. And that's the basic idea. You will never be a cut off from that audience that you own and control on your website and on your mailing list.
Absolutely. So, Dave, I've got one that nobody wrote us about, but it just came to my mind because I know there's some people that are out there. And this is the situation, too. So I'll just lump it in for the people that haven't written this question.
OK.
Hey, Dave, I've got this friend of the family that's offering to host my comic on their server. They're going to set me up. They're going to do this, that, and the next thing. I don't have to worry about web hosting costs because he's got a server, going to set me right up on that server, and he's going to publish my webcomic and I don't have to do a thing. Is that a yes or a no?
So that's a really good question. We have encountered this, and I'll go further. Not only have I encountered this, Brad, I lived this at one point.
You and me both.
A reader who was like, "Hey, listen, I got my own server out of the East Coast. I can put you on there." And oh, great. That's lovely. So here's the thing. Like I feel about turnkey services, you can do this, as I did at the beginning of my career. You can do this, but ultimately it comes back to, this is not a service that you are paying for, and therefore you are on the hook if they decide, and this has happened to us, if they decide they no longer want to do it, or they decide they want to change the terms of the handshake agreement, or their server goes down and they don't really have the money to put into it, so that, you know, it's fine. But in the meantime, you're stuck up a creek. So I think, much like a turnkey service, you can try this to start yourself off with. Neither Brad or I are saying you're a terrible person if you want to try it to start, but you have to keep in mind that you're shooting towards owning and controlling your own website.
Yeah. This is one of those things, and you've heard us say this on this show before, this is one of those things that you want to pay for, right? For a number of reasons. Number one, you want this to be a lucrative thing for whomever's on the other side, so they continue to do it, right?
You don't want
to get this thing where, you know, that you're getting treated for free. Because it's great to be treated, but here's the other part of that reason that you want to pay for it, and that's this. When something goes wrong, you want to be able to write that in as a service request and say, hey, this thing that I'm paying for isn't working. Because here's the other side of that. It's really great to get something for free, but then when something needs to be fixed, you've got to go there with your hat in your hand and say, hey, you know, if you've got a little bit of time today, do you think that maybe sometime in the next couple of days you could get around to maybe seeing your way clear to fixing this thing? And you feel like a heel and a schmuck, and you don't get any recourse if they say, oh, well, hey, I'm in Florida for the week and that ain't going to happen for a while. No, you want a moneyed transaction there. It's in your best interest to spend a little bit of money on that.
Yes.
So when this thing eventually hits a hiccup or a snag, you're a customer, not a friend. You're a customer, not somebody that's just standing on the sidelines, because then that's going to protect you in the long run. Some of these cases, you want to spend money. You don't want to take the free option.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics.
So, Dave, this is a great place to mention that this show, along with the last couple, have been sponsored by our friends over at DreamHost, and they've got a really special thing set up for listeners of this show at dreamhost.com/comiclab. You can set up, if you've been hearing us talk about the importance of owning and controlling your own work, like we did in the first half of the show, you might be saying, well, geez, I'd like to do that, but I don't know where to start. Well, I can point you to a web host that I've been using for well over 10 years. They've been doing great by me, and they can get you set up for as little as $2.59 a month with a fantastic package that includes a one-click instant WordPress install, zero risk, 97-day money-back guarantee, and fantastic customer service. I've told you in the past, I've screwed things up so many times I've gone. And actually, we've actually started to see this, Dave, in the Discord server, because some of our Patreon backers have started, they went to dreamhost.com/comiclab and they started setting up their sites. And of course they got tripped up and they did this and they did that. And they kind of ran afoul and they said, holy cats, I filed this support ticket, and they were just absolutely blown away at how good the support is at DreamHost. And let's face it, if you're doing this for the first time, or if you're a dummy like me and you're doing this for over 10 years and you still find ways to muck up the works, support is really important to whole deal. You want somebody to talk you through that in plain language that you can understand, right? And not only that, but a lot of times I can't guarantee you they're going to do that for you, but sometimes they'll just say, hey, Brad, give me your approval and I'll just go in there and fix it for you.
Yeah. Oh my God.
You don't know how great it is to hear. I'll just fix it for you. And instead of, I've got to figure out how to do all this to follow directions. I'm telling you, so much of why I'm such a big fan of DreamHost is their customer support.
And the rubber hits the road here, basically, knowing that Brad has his entire business. This is not just a sponsorship. Yeah. Brad has his entire business hosted on DreamHost. So yeah. this is really putting his money where his mouth is, in terms of he's got his entire architecture there, and everything that we've talked about in terms of owning and controlling your work, that is his base of operations. So keep that in mind as you check out dreamhost.com/comiclab.
So, Dave, let's go through a couple of updates. I've got one really quick one. I actually, I was remiss. I wanted to talk about this during the show last week. But I wanted to mention this just in case it's something that's still kind of floating out there that you're concerned about. Not too long ago, Wizards of the Coast, who own the Dungeons & Dragons franchise, made everybody upset when their open gaming license was leaked. They were going to update their OGL to something called 1.1. Gizmodo.com came out with an article with the leaked OGL, and everybody got really upset. People started canceling their subscriptions to D&D Beyond. And since then, Wizards of the Coast has throttled their plans to release this, and they're working on a new
version. Having done one of Brad's favorite things, we heard you, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, just as an aside, did you read what Wizards of the Coast put out
as their
apology? Started with, it looks like we rolled a one. And it's like immediately everybody went, so here's something I want to put on your radar. And it was actually put on our radar by somebody who's been a Patreon backer since almost the beginning of Comic Lab, Eric Campling, who said, hey, a podcast that I listen to called Opening Arguments is going to discuss this OGL. It would definitely be worth a listen. One of the guys who does this podcast is a Harvard educated lawyer, and they talk about these kinds of issues all the time on their show. Mm-hmm. I listened to it, and I'm going to tell you, it completely changed how I was thinking about this issue. It gave me a whole different understanding from a contract law point of view. He went through and explained this thing in a way that I didn't quite understand before when I was just reading what I was seeing on social media and the web. All I'm going to say, I'm not going to tell you how to think, how to feel. I'm not going to tell you where your emotions should be, but I really encourage you. It's a podcast called Opening Arguments. Just scroll back. You'll see, obviously, the one that's titled D&D. Listen to that show. You're going to get a much better understanding of the issue. And I'll tell you what, it straightened me out on a couple things that I had gotten wrong in my head. And so I really encourage you to listen to that show.
And I will just for those of us like me who don't have a foot in the D&D world, because we've talked about this before, is that I don't play it. I played it once. I don't really understand it. But yeah. when the news gets so bad that it even reaches Dave Kellett's shores in terms of how badly Wizards of the Coast messed this up, you know you've done wrong in terms of PR. And the one thing I just want to add that's always a good thing for all of us to remember is one of the reasons why you want to maintain a kind public face is it takes years and years and years of continuous action to build up a good rapport, a good reputation. And it literally only takes one big gigantic mess up to ruin it all. And in a way, that's what they've had here as far as a PR nightmare, is that they now have to spend the next 1, 2, 3 years building back up good rapport of, hey, we're all so fun and in this for you, and we're all in this together. Because now at the back of everyone's brain, everyone's going, are we in this together, or are you? Anyway, just a reminder that we've seen this again and again in the last couple of years with different companies doing this. But all it takes is one doofus, unkind move to ruin your reputation. And that's what's happened here. And Brad, another thing that we want to bring up as an update for this week is the new class action suit brought against AI Art, which includes Sarah Anderson's Sarah Scribbles. And we mainly include her because Sarah's amazing work is most closest and most akin to what the rest of us do, which is to be a cartoonist. In Sarah's case, though, she's just way better than we are.
Yes, indeed.
But anyway, Sarah and two other artists have brought a class action lawsuit against Stability AI and Midjourney the case is against the companies not necessarily the software. You can't have a lawsuit against software, but the companies that own it. And I thought it was worth talking about, Brad, too, as I said before in our sort of year updates of what to expect in 2023, I thought it would take to the end of this calendar year before we started seeing lawsuits. And I thought it would be driven first by the sort of Fortune 500, one of the big five media companies, the sort of five media companies that own and control most of media in the US and Canada. And I thought it was going to be one of those big five. Turns out it's three artists, one of whom walks a very similar path. And I would love to get your thoughts, Brad, on this update.
I'm thrilled that it's happening. I'm absolutely overjoyed that it's happening. I've started out being very skittish over AI art and AI writing. And I've calmed down a little bit, but I fall firmly in the "I think we need to pump our brakes" camp. In other words, and by the way, if this makes me sound like an old
grandfather MO here is kicking in. Yeah,
I was just gonna say it makes me sound like an old man, but I really do think we're going way too fast, and there's some issues that we need to take the time to hammer out. And I'm super thankful that these three people are helping us, at least putting the first foray into doing that. This class action suit applies to the portfolio site DeviantArt as well. And that's significant. That's significant because this is a big swath of what we do. I'm happy to see them pumping the brakes a little bit. I think we need to take some time to really figure out where the boundaries are on AI art so that as we do go forward, and listen, it isn't going to go away. We're going to go forward. But as we go forward, we can go forward in a way where artists and creators aren't getting hurt.
Yeah, I mean, one, I like Brad, I also agree that this is exciting that these cases are starting to be brought faster than I thought they were going to be brought.
Yeah.
Because we really do need case law on this, on where things stand.
Yeah.
We need to know what happens when a AI is trained on a database of billions of pieces of art, doesn't actually steal an individual piece of art, but steals the feeling of an artist, right, or the feeling or the look, you know, the impression of an artist without, because just a reminder for everybody, normally a copyright case is I draw a picture, Brad draws a picture, but steals from my picture, right? So my copyright case is your work steals from my work. This is a more unique kind of situation. Why we need case law on this is that the AI is drawing a new work that draws on the feeling of my body of work, which is not really been tried in case law for copyright. So we need this. We need to know because, well, go ahead, Brad, jump in.
Not only that, well, see, so I just got done in my update saying, hey, there, and basically, in case you didn't realize that I was saying it in between the lines, oh, there's a lot of people upset about this D&D thing that don't really understand the legal ins and outs of it. And I'm just about to go in and make the same mistake, but I'm going to tell you up front that I'm probably
neither one of us are lawyers. Yeah, exactly.
No, but here's it, given my understanding of how this stuff works. It's surprise, and that I'm sure the lawyer knows what they're doing better than I do. Let's just put that also at the top. But it surprises me that this is a copyright case and not a trademark case. And I'll tell you why. Because copyright allows for a certain amount of fair use, right?
Yes.
They try to decide if the work that's being accused of copyright infringement, if it's transformative from the original, because what you're copywriting is an image, right? An image, a single image can be copyrighted. A book can be copyrighted, et cetera. But it allows for a certain degree of fair use under a transformative work, okay? And that seems to be where AI occupies at this point.
Yeah.
However, trademark, on the other hand, seems to me, with my understanding of this, to be different, because you can trademark an image, you can and then that image, and this is really seems to me more what these three people are arguing. They're saying, hey, you can use my style, my trademark style, or this character that I've created or something like that. You can use my style to make stuff that people think is done by me or done by somebody who's obviously getting a lot of the similar look. That's my trademark. And if they've got a trademark to that work, then it would be something that would be protected. I'm surprised. I guess all I'm trying to say is, given my limited understanding, I'm kind of more surprised this isn't trademark other than copyright. But in general, I'm happy to see that we've started these three brave people, in my opinion, have started a conversation that we badly need to have.
Yeah. And that's where both Brad and I on a pragmatic level come down on, is that this is a cultural wide conversation, some of which the conversation will take place in a courtroom about where we are and how we feel about this. Because I, again, not a lawyer, I personally feel like this case will not win for the reason that a lot of cases similar to this will not win, is that normally, and this is why we need new copyright law. This normally you are saying piece of art B steals from piece of art A. And here is the lineage. You can find these are all the pieces, and you would hold the two pieces up in the courtroom and you say, I see now why that infringes on it. And so this is a very different kind of argument, in that it's stealing the look and feel of a body of work without stealing an individual piece of work. And that is where I think it will be fascinating to see the arguments made in court, because I genuinely don't know, as a non-lawyer, how this will net out. I don't think that it will, under current copyright, my understanding of current copyright law, that it will be seen as an infringement. To me, it feels like it would. It has a good argument for fair use that they use the body of Dave Kellett's work to educate an AI. And education is one of the fair uses of copyright, fair use exceptions of copyright. It educated this copyright in the way that to draw, different hundreds of pieces. And so now it understands how Dave Kellett draws a duck in all the different. And it's one data point among billions of others that it takes to draw a duck. I guess what I'm saying is I just don't see how this could fall for the artists under current copyright law. But that's why we need this conversation, because we need clarifying thoughts, especially in the courtroom, on where we all stand as a society.
Well, not only that, but I think we need to start making it a little bit more difficult for people who produce these this software, make it a little bit more difficult for them to gather up those data points. Right. In other words, here's what I'm saying. I would actually have zero problems with AI art and AI writing if it was opt-in. If I could opt in to it and say, hey, here's my library of stuff. You're welcome to it. Go and make new things with it. Opting in versus finding out all of a sudden that your stuff is being there. Opting in, the concept of consent, would make all the difference in the world for me in this issue. Right. Because then I could control whether I wanted my stuff to do it. And the fact that they're just taking this wherever they find it and say, well, it's ours now. And now we're going to use all this stuff to make new stuff over here. That has an issue of non-consent where I'm like, hey, I didn't say that you could do that. I still have, even if I post my stuff on Twitter, even if I post my stuff on my own website, I still have the copyright to that. I still have ownership of my own work. The fact that you grabbed it from all these places because you could doesn't mean that you had a right to do that.
Yes, I agree with you. And there's some arguments that some people make that like, well, hey, why don't we just take every living artist out of these databases? And so you have everybody before, I don't know, 1940 is in the database, but nobody living is in the database. So, yeah, there's that argument, too. And I agree with you emotionally that it seems like that would be the nice way to do it. However, I also see the argument that you're publicly displaying your art. One of the fair uses of that art is for other people to have a transformative work with it, you know? And so, for example, let's say Dave Kellett, young Dave, 10-year-old Dave Kellett or 20-year-old Dave Kellett has read a lot of Watterson and a lot of Burke Breathitt and a lot of Jim Davis. They could stand, on the same similar legal footing, they could be like, my work wasn't intended to train you to draw Sheldon. So I'd like a little slice of that that copyright money. Thank you very much. The argument, you know, I'm just saying from a devil's advocate standpoint, you know, like the fair use that Dave Kellett put that art to was to teach me how to be a cartoonist.
And if you would have gotten close enough to Jim Davis's style, he would have sued you. And that's what this is coming down to. I can't put words in Sarah Anderson's mouth, but I'm guessing that she's not upset about the fact that her art has been used to inform this illustration that looks like nothing that she has ever drawn. I would imagine her problem is you're doing this stuff and people are cranking out comics that look like I did them, but I didn't. Right. And that comes down to your devil's advocate argument. If you had said, oh, yeah, I was really inspired by Jim Davis. Here's my new comic. It's called Sheldon. It's about an orange cat with stripes and big eyes. Jim Davis would say, hold up there. That ain't right.
Right. And that will absolutely stand up in court. If you can hold an AI generated piece of art and it looks like Arthur the Duck or it looks like Mickey Mouse or it looks like Garfield, everyone will say that art is iterative and directly copyright theft of the first piece of art. But if I show an AI generated piece of art that says that feels like a Dave Kellett, that looks like a Dave Kellett, that's not copyright theft. Like you have to be able to point to an individual piece of art and say you stole from that. That is what you, and that's why, Steamboat Willie will come into the public domain because once a certain amount of time, this is jumping arguments now, so forgive me about this, but like the strength of Disney's copyright for Mickey Mouse, all of the Mickey Mouses that you've ever seen, all of them are based on the copyright protections from that first iteration of Mickey Mouse. And I forget the year, but it comes, He will expire in 2030. Glenn kindly corrected me in the Discord servers for Comic Lab that Steamboat Willie comes up next year, but Mickey Mouse himself doesn't come up into public domain for 2030. And what I'm getting at here is that every iteration of Mickey that you've ever seen is protected by that first lockdown iteration of Mickey Mouse, where he's got the gloves on, he's got the little buttons on the outfit, right? And so what I'm getting at is Disney has something that they can point to and say, you are drawing Mickey Mouse. But if they're drawing something that feels like a Mickey Mouse, but is in no way able to be protected by copyright law, i.e. there's no gloves, there's no buttons, there's no round ears, there's no weird spindly legs, but it just feels like a Mickey Mouse drawing, that's not protected under copyright law, you know? And so this is where it's going to get really squishy and why we need cases like this. Now I'm switching back to being myself and my own artist hat, not devil's advocate. We need cases like this because it is a weird, squishy argument of what exactly are you stealing? You're stealing the feel of an artist, not an individual work of an artist.
Yeah. Well, listen, this is something that I think we're going to be paying attention to as the year goes on. But I for the record, I'm happy to see this happening because I think we need to have
even though I played devil's advocate there, I very much want this case to go forward, as I want dozens more to go forward, because we need clarification as a culture on what is copyright theft when an AI is involved.
Absolutely. So, Dave, let's take another question from our Patreon backer. This one coming in from Michael Lynn Jones, who says, about a year ago, I started my entry into doing comics. At best, I had published only a small amount of work. We had family health concerns that required my attention to the point of setting down my stylus. My question is, after all this time being away, do I pick up where I left off or do I totally retool the story?
Yeah. Wow, this is a good one. So this kind of fights two separate aphorisms that we tend to promote on the show. Is one is to not be recursive, to not constantly go back and recreate work that you've already done, to move forward, like to say, what can I learn from that work that's gone in the past, but now move forward? And obviously, before print, you're going to spell check. So you're going to change the incorrect spelling of words. You're going to fix grammar and stuff. But we tend to argue of like, don't go back and be recursive and redraw everything or redo the first 10 pages just because you want to change it up.
Right.
But however, that also fights against a different aphorism that we often put on the show, Brad.
Yeah, where we say don't stick with a mistake just because it took you a long time to make it.
Yes,
and it's good that we should talk about these two things because they both have very specific usages. When we say the first, a lot of times we're talking to somebody who's getting ready to do a book and they feel like they need to redraw those old strips. Mm-hmm. That's not a great idea. And we've been very consistent in saying, nah, not such a great idea. I mean, in a previous show, we said, listen, if you really, really want to, you can think about it, but think about the time that it's going to take in and make a good decision. I've always been kind of against it, other than, like I said, stuff that needs to be fixed, like a spelling error or something like that. That's always been kind of its own use. This doesn't really fall under that in my mind. This is another thing. This is something where he started something and he's talking about retooling it. Okay. And then I'd say I'd say you have to think about a couple of different things. Number one, how much traction was that thing getting in the first place, right? If it wasn't getting a lot of traction, then it might be a good idea to take this opportunity to give it a look at with some, some fresh eyes and a clean background and say, I can see some things that I'd like to change about that idea. Right. I could kind of see that, all right? Especially since we're also talking about he started earlier in the year, or, you know, this all takes place within about a 12-month period. He hasn't posted that much stuff. So this idea of going back and retooling things, we're not talking about a whole lot of time that he's going to give up either. So now that puts it into a different category for me. And also, this is an opportunity to, like I said, give it another look. Now, if this is something that had gotten a lot of traction, it had built up a big audience and people were clamoring for it, then no, you want to pick up where you left off. But if that had, and I'm kind of guessing it was more of the former than the latter. If this is something that really wasn't getting that much traction, I think you've got a good opportunity to make some fixes and some changes now that you've had a little bit of time go by. Mm-hmm. This might be the perfect time to retool.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have a similar take, which is it kind of depends on how far along you had gotten into the story, which is similar to what Brad was saying. And I kind of land exactly where Brad is in that I don't tend to say be recursive. But if you got 3, 4, 5 pages in, maybe 10 pages in, and a year goes by, a year and a half goes by, and you're like, all right, I'm ready. We're past that health crisis. Now I'm ready to jump back into my comics. And you look back over to those 10 pages and be like, oh, wait, no. I have a whole different. This is not the right way to start this story. Yeah. I need to start a different way. I mean, it's hard to say. It's hard to not be sympathetic to that and be like, oh, all right, I get it. You want to start fresh. It's a little bit like a musician just starts the beginning of a song, gets distracted by someone on the other side of the party. They're going to want to restart again and get and also get the mood going in a way that they enjoy right now. So like Brad, I would say if you're not that far into it and if you're seeing a better path because there's a different you coming at this now and that better path is only requires you to redo those first couple of pages, I'm not wholly opposed to it. I think that's a reasonable way to do it.
I think that's a perfectly good way to do it. And again, I think it's an opportunity that life has handed you that you'd be kind of silly not to take in that case, right?
Yeah, and I want to, since we put that to bed, I want to add on a little thing here that we hadn't chatted about before the show, which is there are going to come times in everyone's life, whether it is the birth of a new child or a divorce or a serious, serious family health crisis, where sometimes the cartooning has to be put idle for a while. Mm-hmm. And it's happened so far in my career, it happened to me once where I had to sort of, because of the editing of script, I had to step away from my comics. And I just want to tell you, it feels like it at the moment, but it is not the end of the world to have to step away and to honor your real world commitments to family, to health, whatever it might be. It is okay. It is not the end of the world. And as this artist is discovering, you can step back into it. And sometimes with a renewed focus and a whole better attitude on it. So I just want to assure you, if you're heading into a year or years where you know there's going to be health troubles or there might be marriage troubles or family development troubles, whatever it might be, it's okay that this is not, it's not permanent is what I'm getting at. There is a way back.
Yeah, it's not a failure. It's just that, sometimes this stuff happens and then you've got to kind of take the pragmatic approach and say, okay, here I am now. Now what do I do? This is where I am and make a smart decision. So Dave, now's a great time in the show to mention this. We talked about in the past couple of shows that we both kind of had rediscovered Reddit. And now that we both started tracking Reddit more, we're like, oh my gosh, there's a person over there doing some phenomenal comics. And we both became very intrigued on what we were seeing. This person's name is Ellen Woodbury, and she does a comic called Pizza Cake. By the way, I just realized that's a play on word. It sounds like piece of cake. It's pizza cake. Brad Geiger. What a great title for a comic. Anyway, we immediately reached out and said, Ellen, you got to come on the show and talk about your comic with us. And she very nicely said yes.
Yeah, and we are huge fans of the way Ellen approaches both the drawing style, her writing style, the way she markets her comic. And so this was a delightful chance for us to sit down with Ellen and to talk with her about her journey these last 2 years. And here we go.
Well, listen, I'm really excited this week because we've got a fantastic cartoonist along with us to talk comics and talk shop with. We've got Ellen from Pizza Cake. Now, if you've been on Reddit recently or if you've been just about anywhere, you've probably seen Pizza Cake. If not, you can see the entire archive at pizzacakecomic.com. But Ellen, we are thrilled to have you here to talk shop with us. Welcome to Comic Lab.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It is a dang delight. I have to say, both Brad and I independently fell in love with your line art style, with your sense of humor, with your entire approach to comics. So we wanted to get you on because it's also fun to have someone whose style is so very different from ours to talk shop and to see how you do what you do. So just from the starting point, for folks who have never seen it before, why don't you give just a quick introduction to what the comic is?
Well, the comic is basically me, my life, my family, my cats, and a bunch of ridiculous scenarios, either real or fictional. I would say a lot of them are actually probably based on things that have happened or loosely based on things that have happened to us. Mm-hmm. I started doing it during lockdown, as I imagine lots of people probably started projects during that time. And yeah. I never really thought it would go anywhere. I'd always just been drawing little cartoons in my spare time. And then a few people got a hold of them and started showing them to other people. And it just kind of spiraled. But it was definitely meant to just be like me and my family with these little cartoons with me and my friends. Shared and laughed at, and then it just kind of got out of hand.
Well, I have to say, as an outsider looking in, for being a COVID project, I feel like it's really picked up a huge head of steam. I mean, again, say from an outsider looking in, but do you feel like you're like, oh, wow, this is really humming along already after 2 years or so?
Oh my gosh. Every day. I pretty much can't believe I'm still doing it. I'm like, I was supposed to just be doing this for like a couple months just to have fun. And now it's like at the forefront of my mind every day. I'm like, gotta, you know, get working on the comics. I gotta get ready for my next post. I gotta do something for the patrons on Patreon. You know, it's so amazing how social media and the internet kind of keeps us all connected and in this crazy day and age.
Well, by comparison, you started an amazing comics project during lockdown. I started gardening during lockdown. By contrast, my tomatoes long since dead, very fallow garden, like didn't work at all. Your comic is skyrocketing and doing amazing. When you were a kid, were you doodling in the margins like Brad and I were? Were you working for the school paper or anything like that?
Yeah, I wasn't. I was on the school yearbook team, definitely. I think they just hired me to draw stupid cartoons and like make cartoons of the principal and the teachers and people they didn't like, probably. Definitely got in trouble for drawing on all of my tests and drawing on everything, pretty much. Everything short of doing like graffiti art on the side of buildings. I think that was my whole childhood, really. Probably started very young as like a toddler, probably around the same time everyone starts to realize that they want to do something, especially as fun as drawing. So definitely my parents were like, wow, you actually... It's not just stick people. You can draw, like keep doing it. You're going to make us $1 million someday. So, I don't think they met many artists. I was like, I don't think we're going to be rich.
Not a whole lot of millionaire artists out there.
Not comic artists anyways. So now,
did you have any comic projects before this? Like, were you working on different projects that just never made it to the web or just never made it or maybe had different directions?
Yes, I did a little one called Dial Tones, and it was about people who worked in a call center because I worked in a call center for years and it was fun. And then I stopped working in call centers and I kind of didn't have any material for it anymore. But I submitted it to a contest that was run in Nova Scotia and it won. So I got like a 10-week run in our local paper and it was like in color. And I was like, wow, I could actually, that was my first thought of like, oh, maybe I could do something like professionally with cartoons. It never really crossed my mind before.
And would you say that comic had or shared a style or was it a very different look than the one you have now?
Very similar. Okay. It was me, but blonde, I guess. I think the main character was loosely based off me. She didn't have glasses, but she was blonde. But I would say if you saw it, you would be like, oh, that's pizza cake.
Right, right.
She ripped off this comic.
Well, your style now, I'm actually sort of curious, is it, it's such a clean line. Is it vector or are you drawing in raster and then just it's super clean?
Oh, it's definitely vector. I think I'm drawing it in pencil and then I have the worst possible process, I think, for any comic artist. I draw it in pencil, then I take a picture of it on my phone, and then I upload it and draw it with a mouse in vector in Adobe Illustrator. So it's a very clunky process, but it works for the way I want it to. So I'm fine with it.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's cool. Yeah. So, and then what would you describe your writing process like? I mean, for Brad and I, both being dads, it's sometimes the writing process comes in chaos, but it also comes like we have to seek out the quiet moments of like coffee in a room with no one else around. What is your writing process like?
usually it comes like from a lot of the chaos. I would say it's mostly just happening around me. And I'm like, I get my phone and I'm like, wait, I got to write down that interaction because that was so stupid. I'm like, kids, do that again. Do that exact same fight or whatever you were doing. Yeah. Or also it's like when my kids leave for school, I don't know if you guys have the same thing where there's this moment where like everybody leaves your house. I'm lucky enough to work from home now. So my kids leave the house. Husband leaves for work and I literally just like fall face down on my bed and I'm like silent. And it's like all these things kind of, these thoughts flood over me and I'm just like, no, I just need a moment to just lay here and like think, and then I'll like sort my thoughts out. I'll write some of them down. Sometimes I start with like a drawing of someone's face of like a weird exaggerated face. I'm like, oh, I could make something around that. But yeah, I have so many ideas. I have too many to write down, but it's a lot of stuff that happens to us.
That's fantastic. Now, so writer's block has not been a problem yet in terms of ideas. That's great.
Knock on wood. I mean, it's not.
Dave, we just jinxed her. Yeah.
I know, we just jinxed her. No, I was going to say, Ellen, ride that train as long as you can. That is, yes. I hope nothing but that continues for you forever. That's great.
So now, Ellen, do your kids know that they're in the comic?
Yes. So I came into my daughter's room the other day to ask her if she wanted like something to eat. And I found this letter. She's like, can you give this to a YouTuber that I like? And I was like, first of all, I don't know any YouTubers. Like, I don't know. And she was like, hi, my name is Elizabeth. You might know me from Pizzacake comic, where I am one of the stars. So oh, it's like, God. She is trying to leverage this comic to like meet YouTubers and like hang out with them. And I was like, she wants to be in every comic. She wants it to be her comic. I think she's annoyed when she's not in it. But
that's delightful. That's delightful.
She's wheeling and dealing at a young age, I think.
And do the cats know that they're in the comic? Are they aware? Are they? Find them being more performative?
I show them. I do pay them, you know, in treats when they give me great ideas, and they seem pretty receptive to that. You know, there's not been any strikes. Well, there's not been any attacks or anything, so it's been good.
That's impressive just to get cats to be cooperative. So now, the question I've been wanting to ask you particularly is, one of the ways that I particularly discovered your work is after Twitter started melting down and having problems, I opened up Reddit for the first time in years because I had long since decided, man, that's not for me. Mm-hmm. And I see you there, and then I saw you over and over and over again. And it, so now what I want to know is what's your approach to social media? Do you have a Reddit strategy? What has led to your success, particularly on Reddit?
If I could bottle it up and sell it to people, I think I would, if I knew exactly what I was doing. I think it was a lot of interaction with commenters and the people in the communities, the various communities. One of the first things that happened was, I made a comment. It was just such a silly comment, but a comic about the difference between like cats and dogs. And it was like a cat's brain versus a dog's brain. And the dog was like, I love you, loyalty, let's play. And a cat was like, eat, sleep, murder, ? And then people were like, it got traction, but it also like Reddit is very, can be very harsh. So so many comments. You can imagine just like some of the worst things that have ever been, but I thought it was hilarious. So I made a comic talking about that and like about how like here was my experience, like, wow, I've never had so many comments. And they were all just like me reading the comments and smiling, but like a tear coming down my face.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like I made it. But I think people like that. And then there were other communities editing my comics to make me say stupid things or like whatever.
Oh, really?
And I guess people thought I wouldn't like that, but I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And I started, I guess, joining in and doing it with them. So then they endeared them to me.
You literally leaned into it. Whereas like somebody like me, I might've got my back up against the wall. You leaned right into it and said, this is great. If this is what we're going to do. Let's do it.
Yeah, I've made my own. I've definitely, I want to let people know that like I'm aware. It's kind of like, you know, you're laughing with them because I don't take myself very seriously and really anything in life. But I think it just also consistency, like if you consistently just keep like pumping out stuff. Like I'm trying twice a week on all my social media platforms, which is a lot, but it lets people get your style right. Like I try and keep the character designs very similar. The background color is that same shade of purple every time. Like the cats are very recognizable. So it's trying to build up like brand awareness, I guess.
Oh yeah. No, you absolutely have a very recognizable style. And, but you had mentioned the social media platform. So I've seen the site. I've seen you many, many wonderful times on Reddit, by the way. When yours hit, they very quickly get up, not only to the top of comics, but often to the front page sometimes. So it's a dang delight to see that. But what are the other outlets that you do? Do you do Twitter and Instagram and, I don't know, TikTok and the like, or what are the other ones that you do?
I've never even opened TikTok. I think I'm scared of TikTok.
Smart move. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. My kids aren't allowed anywhere near. I'm like, if you're at somebody's house and they're watching TikTok, you come home. But like, I think really like Instagram, you got to do Insta. I mean, you can't not be on Instagram, I guess. Everyone told me like, you have to be on Instagram or nobody will ever find you. And so I do that. And it's been really good. I've enjoyed it. Facebook, I guess you got to be on Facebook to some extent, right? You've got to be on these circle of like social media thing. I've never been on Twitter. I created a Twitter login and I forgot my password and I forgot the email that I used for like for some of those things. And it was just so hard to reset that I was like, fine, like, yeah. I'm not going to put my comics on Twitter, I guess. Probably.
You know, in the end, it probably worked out for the best. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So now, one of the things that we've been doing on the show for the last couple of weeks is planning for 2023. If we took a look inside your planner, what do you have cooking for any big projects, any big plans for the upcoming year?
I am trying to make a book. I don't know if it will be available in 2023, but it's not going to be like a comic, like a collection of my comics, because I don't like where I'm mostly online. I feel like the people who want my stuff might be online, where I'm like such an online artist, especially being on Reddit. I was trying to think of an idea to do for a children's book, kind of done with cats as the character, because I love drawing cats. And so I'm not sure if it'll be done within 2023. It's my goal, but it's basically trying to be about like my son has autism. So it's kind of like about introductory to like how kids deal with autism, done with like cute little cats. And so I'm trying to work on that in between working a full-time job and doing the comic and having kids. But it's like,
that's a big load and a worthy goal. That's fantastic. That's a fantastic idea. I have to say, though, as someone who loves your work, God, I would really encourage you. I hope you do a book collection of your work at some point, because I would be the first in line to get that. It seems like a wonderful idea for a collection, your pizza cake stuff.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you get a chance to do it at some point down the line.
I would love to.
Not only that, but we can tell you from 20 years experience, this whole idea that people aren't going to buy the book because they've already seen it online just doesn't hold water. My God. How many books have we sold of stuff that people have seen online, Dave?
Tons. It's been our whole career.
The fact of the matter is that they still like that physical archive of having it in their hands. It still holds true.
And I like that. I will buy books of stuff even if I've seen all the content, but I guess I just assume I'm like, oh, kids these days, I don't want to. Yeah. I don't buy things anymore.
So, Ellen, I got to ask you one final question. And this is just something that we'd like to just kind of end the interviews with something kind of fun. If I gave you like a pocket universe, right? You can check out, you got a month to spend. It's a parallel universe to this one, but you don't have any responsibilities. Your people at home, your kids, your husband, your cats are not even going to miss you. You're going to be gone for a second, but you get a whole month in this pocket dimension that's parallel in every way. What do you do with your month?
Oh my gosh. I would be drawing pretty much every single day. I think that's, I just want to draw. That's all. It doesn't feel like work.
She's one of us.
It's so funny, Ellen, because I asked a parallel question to Brad the other day. I said, okay, Brad, you're given $100 million. What do you do? Yeah. Do you quit cartooning? And we both had the response of like, actually, no, I think we would lean in more. We would hire staff. We would do more work. We'd produce more. We'd probably do grants for other artists like to promote stuff.
How much comics and cartoons and
I know. So like, it's funny. This is how you know you're meant to do a thing where you're given all the free time in the world. Like Brad just gave you a pocket dimension and you're like, I'd probably do 5 a week instead of 2 a week.
Honestly, I would love it. I have so many stupid little ideas for things that I could do as like side series. Like it would just be so much fun. So I think that's a dream job. Then I guess I'm very lucky to be able to do it.
Yeah, well, we're lucky that you are doing it because it is a dang delight of a comic and you are an incredible talent. It's so funny, too, because for Brad and I, who have only seen you over, the last 12 months, 18 months or so, it feels like, and this only happens once every in the blue moon, but it feels like to us that you've sprung your comic on the world whole cloth, like you've had decades of working on it and it's polished, it's ready to go, it's perfect. And it's such a rare and wonderful thing to have a completely, to us, a new artist that is so developed and wonderful and like knows their tone of voice, knows their line art, their skills are there. And God, I see such an amazing future for your cartooning. Like you have such an amazing skill set.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. I'm like a perfectionist. I was so anxious about showing my work. So I think I waited until I was like 34 and then had kids and was like, finally
ready. I'm ready. Yeah. Yeah. No, it is an amazing, comic. And I really encourage everyone to go check it out at pizzacakecomic.com. Ellen, you are wonderful. Thank you for joining us today. It was really a delight.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
And on that note, you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been my delightful friend, Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my close personal friend, Dave Kellett, the co-director of the comics documentary Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And a huge thank you again to our sponsor, DreamHost, over at dreamhost.com/comiclab. Do go check them out for Comic Lab specific deals that we highly recommend. And Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode. Also, if you're listening on Spotify, thank you so much. You're keeping us right up there at the top. Give us one of those 5-star reviews if you haven't done it recently, and vote early and vote often. Keep us up on the top of Spotify.
We're going to do Chicago-style politics. Vote early and vote often. Right. Get in there. Get back in that voting booth. And Comic Lab is made possible by your support at Patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. Patreon.com/comiclab. So Brad, tell me honestly, as a friend, how do you feel about your ankles? I mean, are you mad at your ankles ever, or is this just me?
You know what? I've always had a very love-hate relationship with my ankles. I like the fact that your ankles help you tilt your foot. I hate drawing ankles, though. If you really think about it, ankles are some of the most awkward-looking part of the foot to draw.
Yeah, no, they make from a geometric standpoint, they make no sense. I get how they work, but boy, it's kind of like the lower back. It's like a part of the human body that was just meant to get sprained. Like this is not a reliable piece of work, the human ankle.
You don't want to look at ankles for too long. You end up just put me in a wheelchair and cart me around. I don't even want to move my feet anymore.
That's why I do my characters sort of in 1920s animation style, whoop, straight line from the thigh down to the ankle. There we go. And
no,
we're done.
No ankles on those characters. I always think about, you know, like those stories about when people wore like very, very long dresses and they showed some ankle. That would be considered very scintillating to see somebody's ankles. And I wonder just how desperate you have to be before you get started getting excited about an ankle.
The best joke, I think it was Douglas Adams had a joke about that. All it takes is hiding a body part for 10 years or so. And then once you start to show it, all of society is like, oh, look at that wrist. Oh, my goodness.